is with great sadness to inform you that we lost a great, great stalwart, Ahmed Kathrada, this morning. And I would request that we stand up and observe a moment of silence. Want to say that in this committee I represent Parliament and all the parties that are represented in this committee, and I'm accountable to both Parliament and all the parties that are here, and therefore any decisions that I take, I have to take into account the interests of all the political parties that are here. And secondly, that we are a committee of parliament, not a substructure of the executive. And that therefore, we don't expect the executive to decide when and when not to schedule our meetings. And we don't expect the executive to tell us when to postpone meetings and when to continue with meetings. And we also don't accept the fact that a political party should be communicating with me, telling me which ministers to bring before this committee, because I can't take decisions on the basis of the wishes of one political party. There are many factors that one has to take into account before we act. Last week we had to cancel meetings because of approaches from the executive. And also we had to deal with the media questions, where some parties tell the media that certain ministers are going to be here, and after they've addressed the media, then they come back to me and say, call so-and-so. I am not going to work that way. And also, if anybody wants me to consider anything, you don't take it to the media first and ask the media to put pressure on me, because I will not bow down to any pressure other than the pressure from Parliament, because I'm a committee, I'm a chair of the committee of Parliament, not of any individual political party which may be wanting to advance agendas that have nothing to do with what I was appointed to this position to do. So please, in future, if anybody has a request, don't give me a request a day or two before a meeting, because I will not entertain it. And if you want a request, don't go to the media first and then ask the media to come to me, because I will not respond. And I hope that we will agree that if you want me to treat well, you also have to treat me well. Thank you very much. Honorable.
Okay, thanks. I think I need to respond. I think we all know that there are difficulties with when Parliament is not in plenary, that Cabinet then moves to Pretoria where the departments are. I'm not sure of a lot of what you said. I'm not sure about this executive interference last week to postpone meetings, but from my side as Deputy Minister of Justice, I mean, I'm with, and there will be formal introductions, obviously, the acting minister. But just seeing you raised the thing, I think it's important to deal with this first, this issue up front. I had indicated through our parliamentary liaison officer that last week would be a problem because of cabinet committee sitting that I was going to be part of and had memoranda that needed to go through and to stand in for the minister on that. I'd also requested that this week's meeting not be today, because I have a long-standing meeting set up with the Human Rights Commission. The acting minister then wrote last week a letter to yourself, I think it was in the early part of the week, requesting that the justice presentation take place on Wednesday. However, there was no response to that letter. The response then came towards the end of the week, I think Thursday, that the meeting was today. I had to then contact the Human Rights Commission, who'd been waiting to meet with me for some time. It's a quarterly meeting, because that's one of my responsibilities, and had to postpone that meeting. So I think that I'm not sure a lot of what the issues were that you were raising, but I think that it also needs to be understood that the executive has its program, and yes, it must account to Parliament, but I think that unless the matter is urgent, it shouldn't be expected to drop everything, which I've had to do this time. And so I think it's a two-way process. But I think, Chair, we need to look at how we improve that communication. I'm, as I said, not particularly happy about having to postpone the meeting. It's with the Human Rights Commission. It's caused some problems. But in terms of accounting to the committee, I've done that. But it's a two-way function. And some of the other issues I'm not familiar with that you raise.
I have been communicating with you. I have no problem. But I received many communications through PLOs on behalf of ministers, and that's just not acceptable to me. So if a minister wants to communicate with me, they write to the committee clerk, we consider that. But I can act on the basis of communications by PLOs. We are a committee of parliament, and we've got to respect the rules of parliament. But otherwise, Honorable Horn?
Yes, Chair, also in respect of your introductory comments, as a matter of fact, the DA was the party who went out and in the media said that we would request you to summon certain ministers to come and account regarding the security or possibly the lack thereof at the offices of the Chief Justice. Let me say that I think it is a very unwise approach from your side to say that since this was aired in public, while a public discourse of no small measure took place regarding the break-in, while this was aired from our side in public before we communicated the request to you, that you will not accede to the request, I think you must go and rethink your approach, because it is quite simply so that if it is the duty of Parliament to oversee also the security at the office of the Chief Justice, then even if we were at fault in any, if we can say in a democratic dispensation we were at fault airing our own views on this matter before we send you a request, it will be a very sad day for democracy if that is the reason why you will not accede to the request indeed.
All I'm saying is that I don't want anybody to send a request to the committee through the media. If you want to request anything, that must be communicated to the committee, but not to the media, and ask the media to talk to me. Thank you very much. Honorable Minister Mtambi, Deputy Minister John Jeffries, Director General Madonsela, Head of MPA Mr. Sean Abrahams, welcome to this session. Uh, and Advocate Mutiba. You are all welcome. It's the first time that our meeting starts with what Basotho called it Fele. But sometimes it's not a fight, it's just we remind one another so that we find a way of working in such a way that there are no frictions. But thank you very much for your indulgence. And then with the Deputy Minister, we were together over the weekend. So this was the second stage. Okay, thanks. We have agreed with the Acting Minister, Tambi, that the political overview today will be confined to justice, and we will have another opportunity to deal with correctional services. I think justice needs enough time to be thoroughly dealt with. So, Minister, I think all members would agree that we confine ourselves to justice today, and I open the floor to you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. At least it gives me comfort because I was a bit worried to say this is how these meetings are here, but I'm comfortable now. Especially the other one that you were together with the Deputy Minister over the weekend. It gives me comfort. Thank you so much, Chairperson. I think from the outset I wish to convey the warm and hearty greetings from the Minister of Justice and Correctional Services, Advocate Michael Masuta, on whose behalf I have the privilege to appear before this committee today in my capacity as the Acting Minister. Upon his discharge from hospital 2 weeks ago, and on doctor's orders, he's still recuperating. So he has been given a long leave to get well at home. But I must say up front that I had an opportunity to meet with him yesterday before leaving Pretoria to come this side, so that then we exchanged the notes, and he has endorsed the overview of his portfolio in which I'm going to present now. At the same breath, I want to thank the Deputy Minister, John Jeffrey, for having accompanied me here today. Indeed, we had to take him out of his hectic schedule because we view accounting to Parliament very serious. As you've also seen, all the head of the entities that report to the Department, they are all here. That's how we view this committee serious. As well that then the issue of communication, as you have said, it will be resolved so that meetings are timely prepared. As the Deputy Minister has said, last week we had cabinet committees in Pretoria. They were not going to be feasible. Like if we are around here, at least we can even sneak out of cabinet committees and come to the committee, taking the committee seriously. So for the administrative budget purposes, the vote of the Department of Justice and Correctional Services also covers the two Chapter 9 institutions, namely the Public Protector South Africa and the South African Human Rights Commission. In terms of the Constitution, Honorable Chair, these are independent institutions supporting democracy, which will present their plans to the Portfolio Committee in due course. The Honorable President, Mr. Jacob Zuma, in his State of the Nation address this year, declared 2017 as the year of Reginald Oliver Tambo, Unity in Action, Together Moving South Africa Forward. As the overwhelming majority of South Africans know, Oliver Tambo was the longest serving president of the ANC from 1967 to 1991, during the most difficult years in exile, and he has played a pivotal role in the birth of the new democratic country in which we live today. This year is also significant as we mark the midterm of the medium-term strategic framework of the Fifth Administration. As members are aware, the MTSF 2014-2019 constitutes the first full 5 years of the implementation of the National Development Plan. Accordingly, the presentations by the department and its entities will indicate the progress we have made thus far on the implementation of the MTSF and challenges that each has confronted in this period. The strategic plan will also indicate what still needs to be done in the remainder of the term of the administration, and the annual performance plans will also indicate what we commit to do and achieve in the next 12 months, commencing from the 1st of April. This plan, I should mention here, Chairperson, has been developed against the backdrop of the prevailing unfavorable global and domestic and economic conditions. Therefore, the Ministry of Justice and Correctional Services is an important link in the chain of both the civil and criminal justice system. In order to contribute meaningfully towards the achievement of the goals of desired outcomes set out in the MTSF, we have established a mechanism of effective coordination and alignment of the plans of all the departments and entities falling under the portfolio and monitoring of their implementation. To this end, I'm proud to announce that we've established a forum of heads of entities convened by the Director General of the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development, which means at least once per quarter to align and when necessary to ensure that effective delivery on the performance agreement the Minister concluded with the President is attended to. I'm also advised that the forum has already met several times and its engagement are starting to yield positive results. As far as the legislative program is concerned, honorable members, we are pleased that the Traditional Courts Bill is now before this committee following its approval by Cabinet in December 2016. As honorable members are aware, there was vehement opposition to the bill when it was introduced into Parliament during the past two occasions. With the assistance of the reference group, we have since made significant strides in addressing the concerns that were raised in relation to this bill. We have recently also introduced the Cyber Crimes and Related Matters Bill into Parliament in a bid to ensure that cybercrime is dealt with effectively by the law enforcement agencies and the courts. Owing to the escalating rates of racial incidents in this country, Cabinet also approved the Prevention and Combating of Hate Crimes and Hate Speech Bill, after which comments were invited on the bill. We are now busy evaluating comments received and will present the bill incorporating such comments to Parliament soon. The Department is also giving attention to the development of policy and legislative framework on community courts and the optimal use of advice centers as mechanisms for enhancing access to justice. These structures not only create alternative forms of access to justice and thus alleviating the burden from the mainstream courts, but they also serve as a platform for the use of paralegals who provide an essential service to communities in who cannot afford services of the legal practitioner. We have also taken a view that the substance of policy initiatives and the resultant legislative frameworks will be greatly enhanced through holding the national conference that is being planned. That includes most of the issues that you have raised with the department earlier. So what we are going to do through that conference, the themes will be worked on collaboratively with your good selves as the portfolio committee, including the commissioning of research and the call for papers. I must also add that the use of the African indigenous language in court will also constitute one of the themes for discussion at the planned conference. The lessons learned from the pilot project on the use of indigenous languages in certain designated courts will also guide us on the capacity we require to fully implement the policy of multilingualism in our courts. We are also continuing with the rationalization of the magistrate districts as one of our mainstay projects, which is aimed at redressing the special injustice of the apartheid past. To date, the project has been rolled out in the four provinces, namely Gauteng, Northwest, Mpumalanga, and Limpopo. By the end of this year, the Free State and the Northern Cape provinces will have been completed. The rationalization in the outstanding three provinces will also be accomplished during the remaining term of this fifth administration. During his presentation to the committee honorable member in 2016, Minister Masuta announced the Renaissance Project as a game changer of the South African legal system in its entirety. Part of this project includes the review of the apartheid era legislation, which is spearheaded by the South African Law Reform Commission. This is in addition to Project 25, which looked primarily into the constitutionality of all legislation in terms of its compliance with Section 9 of the Constitution, that's the Equality Clause. The South African Law Reform Commission will be capacitated in order to fulfill this huge task. Also linked to the Renaissance Project is the complete overhaul of the criminal justice system to align it to the democratic order. The review will address challenges that relate to the slow pace of the modernization of court processes through the Integrated Justice System Program and the lack of effective coordination across the justice, crime prevention and security cluster departments. In this past week, we were able to present to Cabinet a plan on the engineering process, which is to be led by the Director General Forum of the JCPS. I'm also advised that this portfolio committee is also keen to receive a presentation from a combined team of the JCPS on the integrated criminal justice reform. We will gladly welcome the opportunity to do so as soon as the committee is ready. We will also present to this committee the final report on the assessment of the socio-economic impact of the decisions of the Constitutional Court and the Supreme Court of Appeal. This will be done soon after Cabinet has considered the report, which we contemplate it will be within the next few weeks. This exercise and the implementation of the resolution of the historic meeting of the National Executive and the heads of the judiciary on 27 August 2015 are contributing to the Renaissance Project. The details of the APPs will show how the thematic areas of the Renaissance Project run across all the APPs that the members of the senior management are going to present. Once again, I want to assure members that we are steadfastly continuing with the work on the transformation of the state attorney and the legal profession itself. Since the amendment of the State Attorneys Act, which establishes the Office of the Solicitor General, among others, we have experienced challenges with the recruitment of candidates to fill this important post. This is further compounded by the fact that the salary level of the position is equivalent to that of a Deputy Director General in the public service. Processes are therefore underway to amend the legislation in order to address these challenges. To also transform the state legal services broadly into legal firm of choice for government, we are looking at the dispensation outside the public service, similar to that one of the National Prosecuting Authority. To this end, we have reframed our thinking on the direction of the new state legal services component. The model of the National Prosecuting Authority presents an option in terms of building and attracting the necessary capacity and capability of the state legal services component. To date, only certain provision of the Legal Practice Act came into operation on 1st February 2015. These are the provisions that deal with the establishment and the mandate of the National Forum on the Legal Profession. The remainder of this act is not yet in operation and will not come into operation until the National Forum has completed its mandate. The National Forum has a lifespan of 3 years, during which it must do what the provisions of Chapter 10 of the Act require. We have recently sent proposed amendments to the Legal Practice Act to Cabinet, which also seek to extend the 3-year lifespan of the National Forum in order for it to complete its statutory mandate. This amendment will ensure a smooth transition to the new dispensation as provided by the Act. The transformation of the judiciary, honorable members, remains an important constitutional imperative which continues to receive our attention. At the beginning of this financial year, Minister Masuta appointed four chief magistrates, and these appointments were made soon after the appointment of 27 regional magistrates in October 2015. I've also received for my consideration recommendation from the Magistrate Commission for the filling of the 48 posts of senior magistrate in various magistrate courts countrywide. I intend to make these appointments before the end of this week. I've also been made aware by Deputy Minister Jeffries that the Magistrate Commission is hard at work to process the remaining 214 vacant posts of entry-level magistrates, and we extend our gratitude to the men and women for putting an extra effort to complete this important assignment. In respect of the Superior Courts, the Judicial Service Commission is scheduled to sit next week from the 3rd to the 7th of April to interview candidates for the filling of the 13 vacant offices of justice in various Superior Courts. This includes the position of the Deputy Chief Justice, President of the Supreme Court of Appeal, a Judge of the Constitutional Court, and Judges President of the 3 of the 9 divisions of the High Court. The nomination by Honorable President Zuma of the first woman candidate for the position of President of the Supreme Court of Appeal underscores the ANC government commitment to gender transformation. The Office of the Chief Justice has, since its establishment, made great strides in providing support to the Superior Courts in ensuring that an efficient and effective court administration system is in place. As a constitutional imperative, the Office of the Chief Justice will continue to support the Chief Justice in relation to the implementation and monitoring of norms and standards for the exercise of the judicial functions of all courts. This support and implementation of norms and standards, they enhance access to quality justice for all and therefore making our democracy functional, solid and stable. Additionally, the Office of the Chief Justice provides support to the judiciary in contributing to outcome 3 of the MTSF, which means all people in South Africa feel safe and free. The OCJ also contributes to the implementation of this outcome through providing administrative research and statistics coalition to ensure that the performance standards gazetted by the Chief Justice are met. Honorable members, we also note that the Judicial Service Commission is still grappling with the complaints lodged against certain judges as part of judicial accountability. It is important that we implore on the Judicial Service Commission to put measures in place to address this concern. The Department of Justice and the National Prosecuting Authority have been at the forefront of developing a comprehensive victim-centric approach to deal with sexual and gender-based violence. To realize this, a total of 55 sexual offenses courts have been designated since 2013, and the outstanding 2 will be designated by the end of this week to bring the total number of sexual offenses courts to 57. These courts have helped improve the conviction rate, which stands at 72%. The National Prosecuting Authority has also identified the need for the investigative capacity of the police to be enhanced to deal with the violent process, to have proper mechanism to gather evidence in order to improve the prospects of securing convictions in court. Furthermore, the NPA has identified the need to enhance its capacity and to deal more effectively and comprehensively with the organized crime. Enhancement of the investigative capacity and better cooperation and collaboration with prosecution is particularly critical to ensure that the country is able to break the bone of the organized crime. The drug master plan that resides under the Department of Social Development is a very comprehensive plan but requires more resources to support and enhance the law enforcement aspect in order to improve the fight against the scourge of drug use in our communities. The JCPS cluster strategy to deal effectively with gangsterism is also in place, but there is a need for more prosecutorial capacity in particular to breathe life to its implementation. House Chairperson, I want to assure you that the Special Investigating Unit continues to play a critical role in government's commitment to fight corruption. For the 2016-17 financial year, we had 8 proclamations and submitted 5 reports on completed investigations to the President. Discussions are underway on the resuscitation of the SIU Special Tribunal, which will enable the civil matters brought by the SIU and recovery of monies lost to be attended to speedily. The proposed amendments to the SIU Act will also address areas that have presented difficulties for SIU, including recovery of fees from line functioning departments. Legal Aid South Africa also continues to make access to justice a reality for poor and vulnerable groups, and during its presentation, the Legal Aid will share with the committee its coverage of criminal and civil legal aid services as well as legal advice service. Also, honorable members, I think it's worth mentioning that in the 2015-16 financial year, the Legal Aid South Africa attained its 15th consecutive unqualified audit by the Auditor General of South Africa. This is an unparalleled commendable achievement. I'm also advised that Minister Masuta has started to engage with Minister of Rural Development and Land Reform to discuss the role of Legal Aid South Africa to play in relation to assisting indigenous claimants in land restitution matters. Also, the establishment of small claims court through which justice becomes more a reality to the poor and vulnerable members of our communities, another success story. By this Friday, 31st March 2017, we will have proclaimed the last 4 remaining small claim courts in Wynberg Free State, Finneson Free State, and Odendaal-Sres Free State and Riedersberg Free State Magistral District. This will therefore result in a 100% fulfillment of our objective of establishing a small claims court for each of the 405 magisterial districts across the country. Also, the members of the information regulator were appointed from 1st December 2016. They are hard at work in getting the office of the regulator operational, such as the organizational structure and the development of regulation required to be made by the regulator before it can implement the provision of the Act. The department is supporting the regulator in these processes. A budget of 16.7 billion, excluding direct charges, has been allocated to the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development for the years 2017-18. On this amount, 3.7 billion is allocated to the NPA, 1.8 billion to the Legal Aid South Africa. Court infrastructure constitutes 769 million of the department's budget. There are discussions with the Department of Public Works to review the delegations regarding the maintenance of our capital infrastructure. The department will also this year and for the first time employ persons who are trained and skilled in building construction at provincial and court level to ensure timeous and qualitative outcomes in relation to the maintenance of infrastructure. Discussion also with the Department of Public Works are at an advanced stage regarding this fundamental shift. We are also strengthening the security of our courts following the unfortunate breaking into the office of the Chief Justice a fortnight ago. The critical infrastructure bill, which aims to bring long-term solution regarding the safety of critical infrastructure, which include the premises of the Office of the Chief Justice and other courts, is currently before Parliament. Going forward, Honorable Chair, the annual performance plan 2017-18 will be implemented with the financial challenges and a budget shortfall of 45 million. Over the MTEF period, 2017 to 2020, Legal Aid South Africa will have a budget shortfall of 201 million, which will impact staffing and recruitment levels, will be managed in line with the budget constraint. Service delivery is being monitored to further improve alignment between supply and demand. It also noted that there will be a reduction in services which will be tracked and reported on. I want to also thank the committee for its leadership and meticulousness in carrying out its oversight responsibility over this titanic portfolio. We are also indebted to you, Chair, to your insightful leadership and the collective, including the guidance that you have provided the department throughout. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Minister, I would want to request that you send our wishes for speedy recovery to the Minister, and also to say that Deputy Minister Jeffries has been working very well with us, and that he's also accessible to civil society, which is important. But your report also shows that, as you said, the DG and the Deputy Minister take us seriously, because I see that the matters that this committee raised, repeatedly, are reflected there. So I guess the honourable members would be happy to see that we are not talking past each other. The only thing that I want to raise before I open the floor is that we welcome the proposed engagement between Minister Masuta and the Minister of Rural Development, because as this committee, we are concerned about the fact that there are land claimants that lodged their claims in 1998. Then even today, their claims cannot go to court because they don't have funds. But it has come to our attention that some funds which must be used for that purpose have been privatized. For instance, there are funds which were given to the Center for Applied Legal Studies and Vets, apparently to distribute to other lawyers. And I think that puts that center in a difficult situation of conflict of interest, because if you are a lawyer, you have your own staff. How do you give the money to other legal firms? And there are also some funds which, if we are correctly informed, are given to Chitlin Thompson, which would also put that company in a difficult situation. And we think that Legal Aid South Africa is a very credible organization led by an eminent jurist, Judge Mlambo, that all such funds must not be in private hands but in a state institutions like Legal Aid South Africa. So we will request your intervention in that matter, so that this matter is addressed immediately. And I'm sure you are aware of the concerns about the slow process, which shouldn't really be happening if we make all resources available to the lawyers. And also, the complaint by the legal fraternity that they don't really get adequate briefs from the department. You may be having some constraints. We need to know as this committee, because we are answerable to civil society, to the public. So if the department has challenges why the briefs are not available, we need to know, because if these black lawyers don't get briefs, we will not be able to produce a new crop of judges, and I don't think that's what anybody would want to see. But thank you, Acting Minister, for a very good report, which will certainly take us forward. And thank you, DG, and your team for the good work. Honourable, do we discuss this, or we move on, or what do we do? I need your guidance. Honourable Horn, I can see you are excited about it.
Yes, well, Chair, I don't know whether that was off the record, but the Acting Minister said to me before the meeting she's in a position to answer any questions we have for her. No, in all fairness, there are questions that arose from the address, and we can put them on the record, but we're not ignorant as to believe that the Acting Minister will necessarily be in a position to answer all of them. I don't know.
Just because I think the department and the entities are doing their briefings over a number of days. But if there are questions of more of a sort of political nature, high-level nature, that those should be asked. If it's detail, that maybe those can then be left for the officials to respond to when it comes to, that they may be giving some of the detail in their input. So that would be my suggestion. I mean, look, we can take anything, but maybe if members can try and keep it to the more political, high-level questions.
Reflected what we always do. So that's the way we will go. Honourable Major.
Thank you, Chairperson. It's just a comment. I don't actually expect a response, Minister. To say that we commend the department for appointment of a woman president for the SCA. It's a big step forward for women, and that is appreciated. And also to indicate that we are continuing to be concerned about the number of vacant posts in the Magistrates Commission, if that could be given speedy attention. And also, in terms of the National Forum for Legal Practice, it will be good for the committee to move along with what the forum is doing, so that on a continuous basis we get reports from the National Forum for Legal Profession. Thank you, Chairperson.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. And thanks, Minister, for the presentation. The mic is on. Thanks, Minister, for the presentation. I think it's a comprehensive presentation. I'm joining the chair. That is a well-researched presentation in terms of what the committee has been raising over time. I think, like the chair has raised, I think what may be more urgent is the matter around the legal aid, having to deal with these land-related issues. I think would appreciate if we can frustrate that matter as quick as possible, because that is a matter that is at the heart of the majority of our people. And second, what the chair has raised, the matter of the state attorneys, the briefs. You know, there is a general complaint in our constituencies that these young attorneys and advocates who recently got into practice are closing down their offices because they're not getting sufficient briefs that can boost them to compete equally with other attorneys and advocates. And I appreciate the the Legal Practice Act, I think also they may need to frustrate in terms of timing so that we get into the provision of chapter 10 must be dealt with as speed as possible. One matter that we need to investigate, Minister and Deputy, because there is a lot, the court rolls are very full. If we were to investigate, how can we increase the amount of the small claims court so that we are able to alleviate the pressure in the that is in the court roll. But one other matter which I think it's important, which the department must assist us on, particularly we are the politicians at this level. There's a matter that keeps on coming. I don't know whether it needs us to have a symposium, Chair, or to have a big conference. But to investigate how do we... Is this constitutional democracy still relevant in this dispensation, or we need to come up with a parliamentary democracy wherein we'll be able to exert the power of the elected representatives as opposed to the power of those who are not generally elected. So it's a matter that I think at a technical level we need to start the discussion and see whether to what extent and do the checks and balance on whether the is a constitutional democracy or a parliamentary democracy. Because what we've seen over time now is that we're seeing some overlaps between what the legislature must do and what the court must do as checks and balance. So it's a matter that I think we may open, it may be debated, but because we are justice and constitutional development, it is envisaged if we are constitutional development that we need to develop this constitution. So it should not be just static. And for us to develop it, it will be on the basis of the debates that are taking place in this parliament. So I think those are my few comments, Chair. Thanks.
I can see Honorable Mpumulwana is very happy with your input. We'll come back to that.
Yeah, Chair, in respect of that input, I know the Honourable Bongo at some stage boasted with me that he enrolled at UCT for a Master's in Constitutional Law. I don't know how far he has progressed, but luckily for South Africa, I think to change the status of our constitutional democracy into a parliamentary democracy would need 75% of Parliament's approval. So maybe the minister can say how she will vote, but that's as far as we can get. In respect of the address of the minister, Chair, a few political questions then. The first, in respect of what the minister last year, October, when he met with this committee, termed the Renaissance Project. And now, again today, it's stated that the South African Law Reform Commission is to be capacitated to undertake this very important exercise. I think everybody in the committee at that time agreed that this was high time to embark on this exercise to check on the constitutionality of all legislation. But it is a bit of a concern that now the only info we get here is that the Law Reform Commission will be capacitated to deal with this, and yet in the budget and the APP, the only thing we see is that the Law Reform Commission is to be what is called there repositioned. But there's no budget to start with this very huge task. So I think we are in need of a bit of a more of an explanation regarding this project. Then, Chair, it's also said that, and this really is a bit muddied to me, that as part of the Renaissance Project, we're now looking at an overhaul of the criminal justice system And then it is linked to the very slow progress with the Integrated Justice System project. Now, this Integrated Justice System project has been on the agenda since forever. There's been spent hundreds of millions of rands without real progress. And I think the question begs is, isn't an overhaul of the criminal justice system of this country a totally different exercise than an integrated criminal justice system which really looks toward case management and not the contents of our criminal law? And then another issue, Chair, which both in terms of the address of the acting minister and as well as the APPs, which we will get info from the department of, is this, the way this socio-economic impact assessment, which has been coming for a number of years, are now seem to be forming the basis for discussions or decisions regarding the court administration model going forward. And I think we as a committee must ask for an explanation as to how these two issues can even be linked in any way. We have this socio-economical impact assessment, which we the other day heard has been sitting with, well, we know from the minister's own briefing in October last year, has been sitting with cabinet now for months. Now it's contemplated that cabinet will consider this report within the next few weeks. Yet on the other hand, the APP talks about a approval of this report. Now, I don't know how an independent outsourced report can be considered to be in need of approval from cabinet on the one hand, but on the other hand, if it assesses socio-economical transformation by court judgments, how can I really struggle to in my wildest imagination understand how that can form the basis of discussions regarding court administration models. And then the next issue is regarding the...
Can I just quickly interrupt? Can we just get the page number on the APP on that?
Sorry, Chair. The department's APP, page 41, 663, if that could assist.
I thought that maybe we just comment on the political overview.
No, I understand, Chair, but obviously there had to be a political decision to link these two. I can't for the life of me believe that only the department decided
on
this.
Proceed. I thought that it would be much easier.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. Then, regarding the Solicitor General, I think we also are really in need of a more detailed explanation. We were informed in October 2014 already that the filling of this vacancy would be a priority. Then at the next briefing, beginning of 2015, we were informed that it now transpired that the grading of the post was insufficient. So we need to be explained as to why now, near the middle of 2017, there's really been not any real progress. After we all agreed that this position, the creation of this position, and ultimately the filling of it, is in the interest of justice. So the information contained in the address really doesn't put us in any position to understand what's happening with this position. And then regarding the Legal Practice Act, and the Honourable Pilani Majaki has already referred to it, it's now contemplated that the National Forum must have a lifespan of 3 years, which I don't disagree with.
My question is really this, that at the end of last year, it was made public that there's actually a number of amendments to the Act that will be needed to facilitate this new thinking. But yet, we are not in a position yet to deal with any amendments. Are they coming, or are we trying to give this national forum the 3-year lifespan without amending the Act, and if so, how will that be done? And then lastly, Chair, on the very last page of the address, page 10, mention is made of we are strengthening the security of our courts following the unfortunate break-in into the office of the Chief Justice a fortnight ago. I think politically speaking, I reiterate that we are really in need of more info. We have seen also in the department's reports that they said that financial constraints have, in their briefing to come, have put their ability to properly secure our courts and our judiciary under pressure. But to say we are looking at ways to strengthen this, I don't think is really a proper answer, given the fact that I think everybody in this country is worried about what happened and how to prevent this again going forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, Minister, for your input, and please pass on also our best wishes to Minister Masutu for his recovery. Just one or two general overarching issues. One mentioned in your report relates to the Department of Public Works, and I'm sure in your other portfolios you understand that there are concerns across the board with departments and public works, and in the past we from Justice have recommended that the Minister meets with the Minister of Public Works on a high-level political level to resolve issues relating to infrastructure, building of courts, that we have those issues, and to what maybe you could give us, or one of your colleagues could give us an update on that. Just one particular issue that came to our notice was the Durban Magistrates Court, where the lifts were not working. That was in December due to non-payment, 1.8 million. Maybe that is quite specific. You might not have an answer to that, but maybe a member of your department would be able to tell us. Just generally speaking, what is happening with that high-level engagement with the Department of Public Works. Then, Chair, the issue of legal aid that was mentioned by the Minister is, of course, very important, and we commend legal aid again for the 15th consecutive unqualified audit. They are a role model for government, and we commend them in that regard. However, in the last engagement with us, they expressed great concern about their reduction in their budget, which would impact negatively upon their service delivery. We, at that time in October with the BBR process, tried to get more funds but were not successful. And it seems to be, could you update us on the impact that that will have going forward? Because obviously if they indicated that they might not be able to provide legal aid practitioners at every court, that then obviously impacts on the NPA, on all other levels of administration where you don't have a public defender there. Then the SIU you also mentioned, and in October we also were, you did make reference to discussions being underway on the resuscitation of the SIU Special Tribunal. Now, Minister, this is an issue which we have raised in the past, and in October, in our BBR report, we expressed our full support for the resuscitation of the special tribunals because this is a very quick way of dealing and collecting monies that may have been civil matters to recover funds. And at that stage, there was an indication that we requested a full report and that this needed to be dealt with as a matter of great urgency. And obviously the discussions need to be held with the Chief Justice. Could you update us on that process to re-establish, because that's obviously in the interests of government, of all of us, to ensure that funds that are fraudulently taken are quickly recovered. Thank you, Chair, from our side. Thank you.
Honourable Minister, you can hear that now we are going to institutional memory.
So you are free to leave the deputy minister to deal with those matters.
About it, the beauty about it, being an experienced member of parliament, I raised all those issues with them. Say they are going to read. That's why I had to look at the minister's previous commitments to do this. Also, the BBBR reports.
Guys, keep that. If she can just.
Okay.
Honorable Maila.
Maila.
Yeah, Honorable Maila, and then yourself.
Okay.
No, thanks very much, and thanks, Minister, for the presentation. You presented as if you are not the acting minister, but the actual minister. Thanks very much. Yeah, Chair, there is an issue on investigations on the use of indigenous languages in our courts as a means towards the enhancement of access to justice. Now, as this committee, we have always been saying, advocating for the inclusion of a compulsory indigenous language in the LLB curriculum as a means to that end. Now, we would just like to check how long is the department, or how is the department envisaging, when will this policy on the use of indigenous languages in court actually be realized? Now, linked to that is the issue of the interpretation services, because I saw there was a study conducted somewhere in the Eastern Cape where it was perceived that many interpreters actually need thorough training, because if they misrepresent what the people are saying, then it will be an abortion of justice. The other issue is that one on the security in our courts, including the break-in at the office of the Chief Justice. In the beginning of February, one accused person was actually killed in a court in Tzaneen. So I just wanted to check how far is the department taking this into consideration to ensure that our courts are actually secure. Now, with the break-in in the office of the Chief Justice, I want to understand, how is that crime classified? You know, why I'm asking this is because I have seen in some media spaces that there are parties who have already concluded that so and so is responsible for that crime, and fingers will be pointed at members of the executive. So I know this matter is still under investigation, but I just want to know, to check with the department on, as I indicated earlier, how do you classify this crime? What lessons have we learned from that? How can we prevent such occurrences in the future? Thanks very much.
Hey, Chairperson, I'm in trouble. Honorable Maila has copied my notes. Yeah.
No, he's complimenting you.
No. I made a mistake. So, on the last issue, Chairperson, breaking it, thank you, Honorable Minister, for the presentation. On the last issue, which Honorable Maila raised, Chairperson, you know, it's a bit disturbing for senior members of parliament, such as Honorable Stan Hazen, to utter words, such words, to point fingers at Honorable
Minister of State Security Matlhobo to say he is to be blamed for that. It was going to be better, Honorable Chairperson, if Honorable Stian Hazen of DA waited for processes of the court to unfold or assist in the investigation. We know legally that as soon as investigations are underway and legal processes ensue, we need to keep quiet and wait for that to unfold. But it was very much disingenuous of him to make such utterances. And again, our Honorable Minister, Acting Minister and Deputy Minister, let the department prioritize legislation which impact or improve the life of our people or promote transformation agenda. In this committee, we have been lamenting about traditional cost bill. Fortunately, that has been addressed. But I'm a bit concerned about Muslim marriages bill. What is happening? The plight of women in this instance should be addressed. That's why I say first priority should be given to legislation which address the plight of our women. And the issue of multilingualism in our court has been touched upon. That's why I said Honorable Mazinga is still in my notes. And they have borrowed my notes. Thank you. And the issue of interpretation, especially the issue as raised, Honorable Chairperson, of inadequate training of interpreters it goes back to usage of languages in the Eastern Cape. And I think it's a general issue. It goes back to multilingualism in court. So that in itself will promote access to justice to our indigent, to our rural people. Because you remember every time we raise that story, Onkhana le mabai, then the interpreter will say, it's refusing me with blankets. And you understand, we come from the same province. We know that Onkhana le mabai is something very, very serious. You can't trivialize it. So, you assist the Deputy Minister.
I know the story. I know what you're talking about. Through your chair, I'm just maybe suggesting that for others who don't, you may find a polite way of putting it.
Conjugal rights.
Yes. So interpretation is very, very critical in our court. We may take it very, very lightly, but Honorable Minister, it is really very, very critical. Take the issue of Onkhana le mabai into consideration. Thank you, Chairperson.
That the Deputy Minister will know, as I said, he interacts with the constituencies, he's accessible, so he knows all these debates.
Well, I don't know why is Bongo protesting. It's my right to speak here. We can be here for the whole day.
Young people, I think we have the right to interact in that fashion. Proceed.
Well, thanks, Honorable Chair. Look, Acting Minister and the Deputy Minister, the effectiveness of the department and the ministry can only be judged on the basis of how effective you are to transform our justice criminal system. And your department should serve as a catalyst for the transformation of the criminal justice system in the country, and failure to be such a catalyst, then what's the purpose of being here, and what's the purpose of how do you justify your existence? The fact is the department is in crisis. The criminal justice system, rather, is in crisis. The left hand seems not to be knowing what the right hand is doing. There are break-ins, there are burglaries, there is chaos all over. Police, one national commissioner one day takes a public platform and says, suspects are known and Mr. So-and-so must report himself as a key witness in the apprehension of those suspected for the burglary in the office of the Chief Justice. There is almost mess all over. How effective is, and how do you justify your existence if you cannot whip various components that falls under the criminal justice system? Perhaps the Ministry of Police at one point will have to speak for itself on these matters. But on the transformation of the justice system, this department remains the most critical component and should serve as a catalyst. To date, we don't know of how many of the colonial and apartheid legislation have you attempted to facilitate the repealation of such apartheid and colonial legislation. 1,850 of colonial and apartheid legislation are still in place today, according to information available to members of parliament. What is it that your ministry has been doing or has done to date to see to it that such legislation is repealed? And this is not withstanding what the work the high-level panel is doing to assess the effectiveness of the legislation since 1994, and the work perhaps that the Law Reform Commission is doing. What is it that you are doing? 1,850 colonial and apartheid legislation is still in place. Have you proposed any measures to repeal those? Have you identified which are these legislation that ought to be repealed? And why is the delay to repeal this legislation? Are you comfortable to forever be reminded that nothing was not that bad about colonialism? And you know, those who say nothing was not that bad, it's because you are condoning it. If you were not condoning, you would have done something about this outstanding colonial and apartheid legislation. You are condoning it, so the government must take full responsibility for those who are boastful and continue to remind us that colonialism wasn't that bad. And you should accept that, yes, those who have been boastful about that, they have grown in your confidence that it was not that bad because you are not doing what you're supposed to be doing to repeal these legislations, the symbols and everything else in our public space that reminds us about colonialism. Secondly, Honorable Chair, we made proposal when we came in that criminality in this country and those who are victims of crime, in majority of cases, are African people, in particular and black in general. And these are victims of arrest and rearrests and convictions and reconvictions. And at the center of that is the whole question of economic exclusion. There's a need for economic justice that ought to be extended to perpetrators or victims of crime and all of that. And we have proposed that criminal record statuses of ex-convicts and those who can show that they've committed crimes because of economic exclusion, such a criminal record should be scrapped. Because these criminal records are the ones that excludes them from getting employment post them serving jail sentence. They've been prejudiced against because of these criminal records that continue to haunt them. However, in that submission we're saying such scrapping should exclude those criminals who committed crimes relating to sexual and gender-based violence, such as child molestation, rape of women, and violence with aggravating circumstances. But we need to know if there's any progress in respect of scrapping of such criminal records for those of our people to have access to economic benefits, for them to make their living without the risk of committing crimes again and without the risk of being convicted again. And if the criminal justice system, in particular the Ministry of Justice, cannot resolve and address this matter in the period of the remaining term of this parliament, then it means this portfolio committee would have not done what it's supposed to do. Come again? It would have failed to show that it speaks on behalf of the people, especially those who have come, unless if the ruling party often forget that it's here at the behest of the poorest of the poor, and we speak on their behalf. And this is not just in my strength of imagination. So this is not just my opinion, Honorable Chair. So justify your existence, and as you do so, please provide evidence to the extent to which you have been able to attend to these concerns. Other members have spoken already on a whole range of issues on how we need to transform our legal system, the jurisprudence, and for which to this very day it still remain untransformed. It's entirely based on the Dutch Roman law, and that again promotes the sense of those who says colonialism wasn't that bad. Lastly, someone says my alliance. I'm not in any alliance with anybody. And there will be no collaboration with anybody for as long as that serves as the bodyguard of white monopoly capital on any matter, including on the land question. Right? Including those who serve as the bodyguard of white monopoly capital, and they know themselves. They are the last to speak here and to remind us about class collaboration on any form. Right? Because those who have been in government and have been entrusted to govern have a much bigger responsibility to demonstrate their preparedness and willingness to transform this country from the legacy of colonialism and apartheid. We are in an era where we have forever been reminded of that past. There was a time, Honorable Chair, in the history of this country where we are told of the bolsterous and flamboyant J.B.M. Herzog, and he developed what was called Herzogism, an attempt by Herzog to exclude English speaking from the mainstream South African politics and marginalize the English speaking. Now those who are reminding us about that are themselves today, and also about that history, are themselves coining their own concept similar to Herzogism, Zileism. And that Zileism at the heart of it is an attempt to demonize Africans. And in demonizing Africans, to paint Africans as bad as possibly could. It's not different from Herzogism. Perhaps Helen Zille ought to be reminded of that. But unlike then, we will remind her and her fellow travelers that this is an era of an African revolution. An African plight, the plight of an African child shall be defended by all means necessary. And in doing so, we remind all of those, including the ruling party, they ought to do something now and transform this country so that those who continue to embrace racism are reminded that we have entered a different phase of our revolution, and that revolution is an African revolution.
Honorable members, I think the people of South Africa are not interested in inter-party quarrels. They see the minister here and the team. They want us to address matters of public interest. So the parties who have quarrels can go and entertain their quarrels outside. Honorable Minister.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Thank you, Honorable Members. I will try to comment on issues like the issue of the legal aid to deal with the land issue. I think this is one matter, as I was meeting with the team, we have impressed it extensively. To say it's a matter, because then remember, legal aid was just established to assist those that cannot afford the legal services. And in South Africa, the reality, for you to have access to justice for now, you need to have the money to do that. That's why I think with your support, the issue that was raised by Honorable Shaw on the funding, because it's all about access to justice, which is a constitutional one. So we need to find ways, maybe if it means the department has to reprioritize to make sure that the legal aid gets the necessary funds to deal with. This is the matter that we are going to take further as part of my handover report. We'll be able to seriously deal with that, including the issue that you've raised, Chairperson, on this issue of the money that are sitting with attorneys and the legal resource center in the university. I think these are the matters that are, to me, they are also quick wins. They need urgent attention. That's why I think you'll be updated regularly as and when the minister comes here on those engagements together with the Minister of Land Reform and Restitution. The issues that are technical nature, which I will also start to allow the team to deal with, the issue of the Solicitor General, as well, Honorable Lord, it has been a matter of concern for me as well. I've seen that, I've noticed that. And the likelihood that you're going to raise it is because it's ourselves that created that position. We should have foreseen the difficulties that was going to come with that. This is the matter that the team, I've already impressed the team to look at that, to say the way I've put it here is not enough to update the members the way we've put it. But this is the matter that will also give it urgent attention. That include also the issue of the legal practice bill. I've good to say, well and well, it's good. We are saying we're extending their term to a further 3 years. And then we are told there's not been movement on the side of the provision. That's why now we're asking for an extension. To say then, is it the department that's toothless? How do we put a legislation then that doesn't give us recourse in case that is also resistant to change, the transformation that the honorable members are raising there, to say this is a matter that as we do that technical amendment, also the issues raised by Advocate Bongo, to say we want to see time when the actual act now gets implemented, in particular Chapter 10. So these are the issues that of high level that we'll be able to follow up. Being a colleague also in cabinet, this is the matter that we are going to raise sharply. But other issues I'll hand over to JJ, the Deputy Minister, and we'll allocate which questions that are truly technical to hand over on the team. I brought a lot of them solely to account to
the public may not know who is JJ.
Deputy Minister Jeffrey.
Thanks. Yeah, I must say, I hope the minister won't mind me raising it, but the first time I phoned her when she was appointed, can I tell the story? The first time I phoned her was just after when she was appointed as acting minister, and she didn't have my number, but she phoned me back. She didn't know who was calling, and I said, "It's your deputy minister," and she said, "I don't have a deputy minister who's a man." Chair, maybe just to go through the points on the issue of the vacant magistrates posts. Look, the difficulty of the backlog did build up. The last appointment of the district court, you've got district court magistrates, senior magistrates, chief magistrates, regional court magistrates, and regional court presidents. Obviously, the bulk are in the district court magistrates. There are 214 posts that were advertised. Oh, sorry, before that, the process is done by the Magistrates Commission, and they then make recommendations to the minister who makes the appointment. The current minister had appointed, where's Mr. Skorsana? How many were the last appointments, or Mr. Williams, do you remember, of district magistrates? And that was in 2014, wasn't it? Okay, 130. No, but how many were appointed then? 113. No, it was more. Anyway, there was a backlog. A huge lot were appointed in, I think it was 2015. The outstanding posts were then advertised last year. They have been shortlisted, and they then got to go for interviews. But because it's for 214 posts, the interview process will take quite long. But we expect that those appointments can be made before the end of the year. Then the next lot of vacancies can be advertised. As the minister had said, there's a whole lot of senior magistrates who would be appointed, hopefully before the end of the month. Then on the issue of the National Forum, the National Forum by statute reports to the minister, or does report to the minister every 6 months. And those reports then have to be tabled in Parliament. So I'm not sure what is, and that has been done. I think the last report was tabled 3 weeks ago. I'm not sure then why, whether it just goes to the tables, whether it's referred, but those reports are there. On the amendment bill, it went to Cabinet Committee last week. It goes to Cabinet tomorrow. It's not an extension of additional 3 years. It's basically a short, giving the minister the power to make a short extension. The amendments will then come to this committee shortly after that. They're largely amendments, I think almost entirely amendments that were requested by the National Forum because it related to the handover process to the legal practice councils. But we still envisage the forum making recommendations in terms of the act later this year relating to the agreement between the forum and the law societies regarding the transfer of staff. We envisage the implementation of Chapter 2 early next year and also the minister's establishment of the Legal Practice Council. And we would hope by the end of next year to have the Legal Practice Act fully implemented. But those amendments that you will then be getting after next week are those technical ones. The issue of briefing patterns. Government bodies use the state attorney. So when it comes to attorneys, they're not given too much work by government because we have our own attorneys. They would be given work as local correspondents if they are in other towns to the main centres where the state attorney is based. They would be used if there's a conflict between people within government. Most of the money goes on briefs because it's private advocates that are appointed, because advocates can't be employed as advocates. They have to work on their own. The department has a sort of moving target of 77% of the value of briefs going to previously disadvantaged individuals, and that target is being met, and it's the value. So you can't say, no, it's black people getting small briefs like unlawful arrests and white men getting more complex briefs. It's the value. I had asked that the information relating to those briefs be made available. The DG, I think, has supported me, and he can maybe explain why that hasn't been put onto the website, or Ms. Pashanek and the Acting Chief Litigation Officer can explain that. But the idea was basically to let everybody see what the brief is and who got it. I wouldn't have minded that we put the value of the brief there as well, but I think the view from the advocates was they didn't want that known because those are sort of negotiated. But it would be at least the name of the brief and who got the brief, the name of the person who got the brief. But I think that I had asked for that some time ago, Ms. Pashanek, can maybe explain then why that hasn't been done yet. The idea would be to put it on our website. The issue of increasing the amount of small claims courts, well, we're just about to reach 100% coverage. We've then got to check on how the courts are working and where do we need more commissioners and things like that. Currently, the value to take a matter to the small claims court is 15,000. We increased it, I think it was last year or the year before, from 12,000. The problem of increasing it too much is it then does take work away from attorneys. And in fact, in some small villages in the country, there has been resistance from attorneys not wanting to serve as commissioners, because they say, look, it's my bread and butter work, and if you have a small claims court, I'm not going to get that work anymore because you don't have attorneys in the small claims court. But we do want to look at that. Then I think it's Mr. Skosana can talk more about the relationship with Public Works. Yes, that Durban lift problem was about, I mean, the contract was with Public Works. I think that Public Works hadn't renewed the contract. They were then extending it on a month-to-month basis, and they hadn't paid it, and that's where the problem came in. But there are attempts to, one, increase the number of delegations, the responsibility that the department has for a lot of the basic maintenance, the payment or entering into those contracts. I mean, why should it be for Public Works? It was the Durban Match Court, the Durban High Court, and I think the Peter Maritzburg Court. I'm not sure which other places. I think Pinetown also has lifts. But yeah. Then just on the SIU and the tribunal, the head of the SIU had discussions with me. The issue we need to look at, Chair, and I know it's something that the committee had been in support of, is the financial practicability or practicality of resuscitating the special tribunal. Remember, when the Act was passed, the SIU was limited to the former CISCI. So you had one area of the country which was going to hear cases. The issue I've raised with the head of the SIU is, because this would then be a tribunal for the whole country, why can't the existing courts be used? Because just to have a tribunal, you would need to, okay, you can maybe second judges from the relevant local division, but you'll have to have an administration staff. If this tribunal is moving around the country, then you're going to have those staff moving around, or you're going to have staff seconded as well. If you're seconding staff and judges, then is it not better to try and work out an arrangement with the judge president to ensure that there's a faster process of hearing the matters? So those are sort of those are the complexities that we may need to look at. The tribunal may have been viable then in the early 90s because it was just dealing effectively for Bishu and CISCI, but is it viable to have a tribunal for the whole country? But those are things that can be dealt with. The issue of indigenous languages, look, I mean, one, the training of interpreters, there is training done by Justice College. There is a problem of, we're not just talking about interpreters into the 11 or official languages, there's a number of foreign languages all over the country. Sometimes the courts have maybe the constitutional requirement is for a person, and that's with a large number of immigrants. Sometimes the constitutional requirement is the right of a person to be tried in a language that they understand. Sometimes that gets the sort of attitude of the court is in their language. But you find often in the country that they've come from that they're not necessarily tried in their own language, but they do understand another language, Swahili or Kiswahili or even English. But there is a problem with a large number of interpreters needed, the cost of those interpreters, I mean, basically from all over the world, Vietnamese, Somali, etc. And then as far as the there was this pilot project in the Northwest Province, which was then stopped because legislative amendments are needed. We do need to push on with that to ensuring that it can be rolled out. The issue was basically the problem of what happens when the translation for an appeal, as far as I understand it. Then on the issue of language for a language requirement for an LLB, which was there for those of us that are older, Mr. Swart, it was there when we were studying. In fact, there were two languages you had to do, or three languages. You had to do English if you were if you were English, then you had to do Afrikaans. If you were Afrikaans, you had to do English, and then you had to also do Latin. And the Latin requirement was it couldn't just be basic Latin. It had to be, if you hadn't done Latin at school, you had to do 2 years of Latin at university. But it's something we must ensure, I think, goes into the next judicial matters bill. Some universities, I think like UKZN, I think currently require all their students to do Zulu. There would be practical issues around at UCT, for example, where you've got, well, basically, the issue would look, one would need to look at is the capacity of universities to offer a number of languages. If, for example, at UCT, where they offer isiXhosa, you've got a number of students from all over the country. Let's say you've got a Xitsonga-speaking student. You know, would they then have to do, would they get exempted because they're Xitsonga-speaking, or would they have to do isiXhosa? Those are practical things we'd have to work out with the universities. The security issue, look, you know, unfortunately, there can never be enough security. So you've had cases of you know, in the Scottsboro Regional Court in KZN, there were a large number of accused, and they got upset about a postponement, so they attacked the prosecutor who had to be hospitalized. It was not unexpected. The police were there, but they were not able to act on the spur of the moment when the incident happened. The break-in at the Office of the Chief Justice, I mean, just to specify again, it's the department. So the Chief Justice's office for his judgments is at the Constitutional Court. The High Court judges' offices are at their various courts. It was the department. The police had not wanted us to give out much information, save to say that there was a break-in from the N1 side of the building, so it was forced entry. They don't want us to go into more detail even on that. And they took a number of computers. There is a figure that's been bandied around. I'm told that figure A may not, it may be less than that even. It's not more. It was the HR section. So it was dealing with issues like the salaries of both judges and the employees of the Office of the Chief Justice and HR issues. So confidential medical information would not be there, okay, unless a judge was asking for sick leave, in which case the minister would have had to have given permission, and it would have been in the form of a memorandum to the minister. So, but the difficulty is it's something that you would need to really, you will be having the Secretary General of the Office of the Chief Justice, who is based at that office. I think it's something that you'd need to take up more with them, unless the NDPP wants to go into more detail. Generally then on legislation, look, the problem with this department is that the amount of laws that need to be passed are extensive. We've got a huge backlog. So the Honourable Member from the EFF was raising about colonial and apartheid laws. Now, I think and if you look at the laws that are still on the statute book, I mean, firstly, not all the laws, the discriminatory laws, I think, generally have been repealed. And if anything, it's the Constitutional Court that will determine whether something is unconstitutional or not, particularly if it offends the Equality Clause. So they will ultimately determine what is unconstitutional, what isn't. But looking at the list of laws that the department administers and when they were passed, I mean, we've got things like the Abolition of Civil Imprisonment Act of 1977. Now, I would imagine there isn't a problem with that. Abolition of Juries Act of 1969. Some of the big pieces of laws we've still got, the Administration of Estates Act, the Deceased Estates, 1965, Apportionment of Damages Act, the Arbitration Act, and so on. But one of the ones that's old is the Insolvency Act, which we are under pressure to amend, and there are drafts of it, but it's a complex piece of legislation. So already the committee has got, the way things work here is that more technical amendments get amended through a judicial matters bill. You've got one currently, which you got last year. And then you've got a number of acts. You've got cybercrime, which is dealing with filling the void where you've got the cyberspace developing and crimes committed in that cyberspace and filling the void in terms of regulating that. You've got the traditional courts, as you all know. You've got the Criminal Procedure Amendment, which is a constitutional court requirement. You're getting, which I'm sure you're not going to be too happy with, but you're going to be getting the International Arbitration Bill. But there's a sector of society saying, look, we want this bill so we can conduct international arbitrations in South Africa. And then we've got the other ones that we spoke about. But basically, the legislative process takes time. And it's not something that can be achieved overnight. The Law Reform Commission has this project looking at it's more been looking at obsolete legislation. They are being asked to reposition it. I think the DDG for Legislative Development, is Kale Pele, who's sitting behind me, can probably give more detail on that. Muslim Marriages Bill, yes, it's a long outstanding bill. It got stuck because there were attempts to get a consensus amongst members of the Muslim community. It was even before my time. What I understand, the sort of deadlock was over. The Muslim Judicial Council was prepared to accept that the courts could adjudicate on Muslim divorces, but they wanted Muslim judges to adjudicate on those divorces. And when that went back to Cabinet, that was rejected. And I do think that's the correct position, because if you start saying it's Muslim marriages that must adjudicate on Muslim divorces, then does it become Hindu, et cetera, Zulu judges on Zulu customary law issues, and so on. Then on the issues of the... what's on Mr. Horn's point? Look, I think the issue of this, I think there's possibly some confusion on this, but maybe the DG can go in more into more detail. The assessment of the decisions of the Constitutional Court, yes, it is under, it's been put as one of the quarterly targets, but it's not, the issue of the question of the judicial administration model is a sort of tough international question with many countries following different models. In the past, the Minister of Justice was responsible entirely for the administration of justice. We've, in a sense, and that is still referred to in the Constitution, a member of cabinet responsible for the administration of justice. Internationally, there's been more of a push for the administration of the courts to be separate, to be entirely independent. It's not clear whether that's sort of working entirely. What we've got currently really is a shared model where we have set up a separate department for the administration of the courts called the Office of the Chief Justice. It's not the best name, and we need to change it, and I think that's what may have led to the confusion also with the break-in, maybe the court administration department or whatever. It deals with the high courts, the superior courts. The magistrates' courts will then follow. But there's issues of accountability that need to be resolved, because to some extent it's shared with the Chief Justice, where they don't really account that. They don't account in the same way as the Director General of Justice does to the Minister. They do reports to the Minister of Justice, but they're more at an arm's length, and they also then interact with the Chief Justice himself. But that's the issue relating to the court model. The assessment of the decisions, I don't think it's so much approval you're right, is the correct word. I mean, that report was on the question of the impact of the jurisprudence. The purpose was to locate the jurisprudence of the Constitutional Court and the Supreme Court of Appeal within the developmental state as described in the National Development Plan, and establish the extent to which socioeconomic rights decisions of the Constitutional Court and SCA have advanced constitutional justice and its influence on social transformation. And there were empirical studies conducted and 140 interviews conducted with stakeholders. I think DG can maybe respond more on that. On the issue then of to the Honourable EFF member, look, I mean, you talk about the justice system being in crisis and how do we justify ourselves. I mean, my understanding is the courts are working, okay? The justice system is difficult because you've got a large number of elements. You've got court administration. You've got the judicial officers who are independent, so we can't tell them what to do. You've got then the National Prosecuting Authority in the case of the criminal courts. They've also got independence. You've got the police who investigate, and you've got other bodies as well, like social development, with social workers testifying. So it's a lot of people that have to be brought together, and if any of one of them, something goes wrong, they get sick, they have a car accident on their way to work, then that's a problem. I think don't over dramatize, please, the problems. There are always problems, but it's not a crisis. Yes, we do need to look at ensuring that it functions more efficiently, and that more people who commit crimes are prosecuted and are convicted. But really, to say it's a crisis, that's feeding your own political objective. And the issue of Zillaism, I would trust, without falling foul chair of your directive, not to get involved in party battles, but I would trust that it was an issue that was raised by your party leader when he met with his partner, Mr. Maimane, to discuss Nelson Mandela Bay, the coalition or the government of Nelson Mandela Bay. So I assume that Zillaism, if it's such so important to you, was discussed there. Lastly, you asked your party leader to raise it. Lastly, on the issue of records, look, originally they stayed for life. Then an amendment to the Criminal Procedure Act was proposed in the last Parliament, which brought in a new system. Well, we started it before that, actually, with the Child Justice Act, In the Child Justice Act, we said if a child had committed a crime, they could get that record expunged after 5 years had elapsed, and it was less serious crimes. They shouldn't have been sent to prison. Then we had an amendment to the Criminal Procedure Act, that then provided that if 10 years had elapsed, you could get your record expunged. I think the bill was a bit more flexible originally, and I think we were worried about unforeseen consequences. When the bill was passed, we said that Parliament or the Minister needs to look at it. That matter has been referred to the Law Reform Commission. Have you got the... Okay. And they have published a discussion document, I think, on the issue of expungement. The Law Reform Commission is there basically as an independent research body to assist, but things take time. I think the issue really would be probably giving the minister some kind of discretion, because at the moment, if you want to get your record expunged, you've got to go to the president. And so we have been, there have been requests to the president I remember one of some young guy, a student who had been convicted, paid an admission of guilt for drinking in public. So he hadn't even gone to court, he paid an admission of guilt, but he had a sentence. He had to get a pardon from the president. I mean, that is a bit ridiculous. Those kinds of cases are pretty straightforward. But I think the part of the problem is that employers, when they want to employ someone, a criminal record seems to be an absolute bar. Now, if you are employing an accountant, the fact that they've got a conviction for reckless and negligent driving, I would have thought should not be an issue affecting their employment, because they're not going to be driving when they're accounting in your office. If you're employing a driver, it is something you should look at. This guy might be a bit reckless when he drives. If you're employing a driver and they've got something for theft, they're not going to be working with money. Does that matter? But the problem is everybody, the employers sort of use any conviction as a general bar. But yes, it's something that's where the process is, but we accept, we appreciate it is a bar to younger people's employment particularly. I mean, the number of pardons the president grants, I don't know if anybody knows offhand, Anika, do you know, but it's quite a number. And they're all basically, they're not political cases, they're all basically people wanting their records cleaned, which is usually done after a 10-year period has passed and the sort of some kind of indication that they've been, they're not going to reoffend. Chair, I think let me stop there. Thanks.
Just to save time, we should remember what Honorable Mutapo said, that with the burglary, investigations are going on. We should allow that process to reach the end. So I think it's not necessary for Advocate Sean to say anything. Also, with regard to the assessment of the jurisprudence, Advocate Skosana gave us a very good report, we were satisfied as a committee. And I don't think we should ask him to repeat that again. So all that we can do, if the DG has other comments on other things, allow the DG to do so.
Thank you very much, Chair. Good afternoon to the honourable members. Chairperson, the Deputy Minister recommended that I deal with the point regarding, the question that was raised by Honourable Member Horn on page 41. After consultation with Advocate Skosana, I noticed that there's actually a mistake in our annual performance plan. The report that is meant to be approved in the first quarter is the model, the new proposal on the model on judicial governance and court administration, and not on that report, which Advocate Skosana presented to you about a week ago. So we will have to prepare an errata to the APP in this regard. Chairperson, I'll comment on a few. Perhaps let me start with the one regarding the Solicitor General. But perhaps before I get too deep into that, I can see my Deputy Minister has stepped outside.
No, he's here.
Oh, okay, he's still around. the the polemical discussion on constitutional democracy versus parliamentary democracy is one that I'm sure is going to be beyond the department at this point in time. It's fundamentally a political question, because the history of this country has traversed the path of parliamentary democracy. In fact, it's more parliamentary supremacy and constitutional supremacy as opposed to constitutional democracy and parliamentary democracy. And those are issues that I think the founding fathers of our constitution made a conscious choice on with regard to what path are we taking. Are we sticking with the past of parliamentary supremacy, or are we pursuing a new path of constitutional supremacy? I hope that I've misunderstood the point that Honourable Member Bongo was making, and I'm sure you'll have the opportunity to correct me in due course. But that is certainly a matter that I think requires greater discussion outside this meeting with the department. On the matter of the Solicitor General, as I understand it, Chairperson and Honourable Members, the State Attorney's Amendment Act created the position of Solicitor General. As matters stand, state attorneys are employed in terms of the Public Service Act, because although we have the State Attorneys Act, the State Attorneys Act does not govern their terms and conditions of employment. So their salaries are governed by the general provisions of the Public Service Act and the regulations relating to salaries. So with the creation of the Solicitor General position, what it then did was that position, the pegging of the salary for that position had to be confined within the rules of the public service. And that created only the possibility that, in fact, this position can only be remunerated at a Deputy Director General level, because this position is still part and parcel of the Department of Justice, with the head of the department being a Director General at level 16. We have attempted, in fact, one of the first things I did when I joined the department in May last year, I was part of a panel that considered applicants for the position of Solicitor General. And what we found was that we have not managed to attract people with the right kind of skills we were looking for. Because what we're trying to do is to build the Office of the State Attorney as the biggest law firm in the country, but secondly, as the attorneys of choice for government. And we found that, in fact, because of the salary level, we were not able to attract the caliber of candidates we were looking for. We then had to revisit that position, which effectively meant that we needed to engage with the Department of Public Service and Administration. After having done so, we came to the conclusion that the only way we can effectively corporatize the offices of the state attorney and peg the salaries at the correct level that would enable us to attract candidates of good quality, we would have to opt for a dispensation that places the salaries of these people outside the public service. To do so, we would have to consider a dispensation similar to that of the National Prosecuting Authority. As honourable members, I'm sure, know, the salaries of the NDPP and the deputies and other directors within that structure, their salary levels are outside the public service realm. And that has enabled the NPA to be able to retain and in some instances recruit people of the right caliber that the NPA requires. And we've taken the view that what we would need to do with regards to the state attorney, but in particular with the office of the Solicitor General. So that is the view we've taken on that. At this point in time, we have commissioned a team from, it's called GTAC, the Technical Assistance Team, which is housed currently in the National Treasury, to assist us with the right kind of modeling for this, together with the necessary legislative amendments that would be required to give effect to the kind of dispensation we would like to see. So that work has now been commissioned, and we hope that sooner rather than later we will get a report on that. Once that is done, we will then approach a cabinet for a decision on that matter, and once that is done, we will then approach Parliament with a bill that then seeks to corporatize the Office of the State Attorney in that way, which will then incorporate the Office of the Solicitor General. Maybe I should take it one step further and say that at the moment we have a dichotomy. We have the Office of the State Attorney focusing on what I would call litigation services. And we also have the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor, which focuses on legal advisory services. What we are hoping to do in the dispensation that we are envisaging is to effectively maximize the use of those two offices, both on the advisory services as well as litigation services. We want the cross-pollination of the two offices to make it possible for government to get the best legal advice and the best legal representation possible within its ranks before we step outside to engage the services of outside attorneys. So at the moment, the Solicitor General dispensation, as is created in terms of the Attorneys Act, does not give the Solicitor General supervisory powers over the office of the Chief State Law Advisor. But what we are envisaging is that we would like a Solicitor General, and never mind the name for now, but we would like a person occupying that position to be able to supervise the work of the state attorneys on the one hand, as well as the legal advisory services, so that the cross-pollination of those two can then give government the best legal advice possible and the best litigation service possible within government. I hope that is the kind of detail Honourable Member Horn was hoping for. I see a nod, Chairperson, so I'm delighted that I have cross that bar. I'm going to, Chairperson, if there's still time, because I realize we still have to present the APP to you.
I think if we can allow Advocate Mutiwi to the head of the SIU to deal with that issue of the substitution of the SIU Social Tribunal in line with the, also the PRR report, that would suffice.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Minister. I'm pleased to report to this committee, Minister, and through the Chair, that we have made progress in resuscitating the Special Tribunal, taking into account what the Deputy Minister has indicated, that the resuscitation thereof should take into account mitigants in terms of financial impact. In terms of the administrative process, what really needs to happen now, that the proclamation is in place, that the President has signed then when it was established, and yes, indeed, as the Deputy Minister says, was based in East London, and now the intention is to ensure that it services the country nationally. And through the department, DG and Advocate Kosana, we have really made some progress in terms of the administrative appointments or possible appointment of the Judge President. And what will possibly happen, and perhaps Advocate Kosana can say, is that with regard to other judges, additional to the Judge President, would be
on a designated basis, not necessarily appointing new judges. So that would be at the current High Court establishments. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I just want to agree with the DG that the issue of constitutional democracy and parliamentary democracy doesn't belong here. It must be dealt with somewhere. Because if you take into account the history of this country, there were atrocities committed because of the abuse of that system. And if we want to reconsider going back, there must be very cogent reasons for that. But also, I just want to place on record that there is nothing from the conduct of our courts and the decision that the courts have handed down which can serve as a motivation for going back to the past. And I think our courts are doing well, and they have done well, because as the Secretary General of the governing party observed, if there is no capacity in government, and government is not doing what they are supposed to do or not doing it correctly, the courts cannot sit by and not intervene. And recently we have seen, for instance, in the Safa case, the courts have intervened and correctly so. Over the weekend, there was a conference of the National Association of Democratic Lawyers. There was an issue about judicial activism, because there's no constitution that can provide for all the nitty-gritties. There has to be a room for interpretation, and we need judges that can implement that idea of judicial activism. But also, Honorable Acting Minister, there's the idea of a renaissance of the law. And progressive lawyers in the country are talking about decolonization of the law. Maybe you must take homework and tell us what is the difference, or if you are talking the same language. But with regard to the national conference, it could be helpful that maybe you produce a concept paper and allow us space to make inputs as to the agenda of that conference. With regard to the integrated justice system, I think all you lead that project. It's either that the other departments are letting you down, or that you are not providing leadership, because this thing is not working. And it will force us to be blaming the police and the prosecution authorities because of failures elsewhere. I think that we need a joint meeting of all the committees and the departments just to look at this area to say who is failing, who needs to be supported by who. Because, you know, if we can't deal with crime, you can do all other things, but the people of South Africa will never be satisfied. And that's why we say we need secure environment and secure communities. So, DG, talk to your colleagues. Our recommendations would be that maybe we need a joint, because you are the leader in this area, we need a joint meeting, and we can't blame you, because alone you cannot succeed. And if you lead the unwilling, you cannot force them to come on board. With regard to land, we got an invitation from the Community Law Center in Pretoria, working with the Center for Human Rights, University of Pretoria, and the Nelson Mandela Metropolitan University. But they postponed the symposium, but now they inform us that on the 19th of April, the symposium will take place, and it would be important, I think they will be sending an invitation to yourselves. It would be important that you are there, and we shouldn't have a situation where, as people say, the whole thing is messy. You should be able to explain, Honorable Matthias, they should be there to explain so that we don't generalize and tarnish their image unnecessarily. But Deputy Minister, rightly or wrongly, I thought that when the committee was talking about languages, we were not talking about foreign languages, but our indigenous languages, because it would be unreasonable to expect you to find an interpreter for Turkish or Gujarati or and so on. I think let's focus on our own languages first and foremost. The Muslim marriages, I think that it's really quite disturbing to see women crying on television because they feel that they don't have access to justice. And we can't expect the women to go and convince other people. As Parliament, we have to ensure that justice is accessible to all the people, and the Muslim women are no excuse. I was very happy at the conference of Nadel, where Deputy Minister and myself were, that even the question of customary laws, lots of questions that even the judges are raising there. So we have focused more on traditional cost bill, not on substantive issues. But substantive issues are being raised. So DG would also request that you look into what is being raised so that we take this matter forward. But can we then conclude this part there and move on to the second part, DG?
The head of the NPA is he wants to delude the item on the victims of crime, but I'll maybe presume that because it's up tomorrow is appearing, he can deal with that matter in detail as he presents the NPA report. There was a question about the victim of crime, I think, for the Yes. Yeah.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. I'm quite happy with that approach. I'll speak quite comprehensively on that topic tomorrow. Thank you.
Advocate Bongo raised about the court rolls that are very full, and then a proposal of having more small claims courts. But then I think we can also learn from the 2010 model, where in all over we had special courts during the 2010 model.
Do you believe that we can also deal with that when we deal with the integrity of justice?
Integrity of justice.
Because there are lots of petty crimes that are going to the courts because of the moral degeneration and other things that don't work.
That's the point that was introduced, Chairperson, to say Cabinet tomorrow will be approving the strategy, the revised one, integrated strategy. It's our call to see if the committees are available. I think then we can facilitate the joint committees, the police committee and whatever, so that we come and brief, because we have dealt extensively with how do we coordinate each other now as the GCPS cluster. The strategy tomorrow cabinet is going to approve it, like I've indicated in my presentation, to say when you are available. That's when we need to come also to share, because your input will also be very crucial on the matters.
Bongo, will you be happy with that? I think we will actually have to be available to receive that and engage so that we can enrich it if it's not rich enough. Honorable Bongo?
No, certainly, I'm happy.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Chairperson. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Is that okay? Chairperson, we've sent in advance a copy of our presentation on the annual performance plan 2017-2018.
Just say that you provided us with the reports on time, so speak to the report. It's half past 12 now, then we can deal with it.
I'm much encouraged, Chairperson. Thank you very much indeed. That being the case, Chairperson, I would like to start with slide number 1 to slide number 12, we are covering matters pertaining to legislation that is relevant to the work that we are doing. Which pieces of legislation are divided into three categories: those which promote courts and administration of justice, as well as the second category that deals with the promotion, protection, and enforcement of human rights, which derive directly from the Bill of Rights in the Constitution. And the third category is other pieces of legislation that are crucial to the administration of justice. I will not go into detail on these. In fact, I would rather skip them because they are quite self-explanatory, Chairperson. I would rather want to speak a little bit on, say, from slide number 13, which talks about the vision, mission, and values of the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development. We have reviewed the vision, mission, and values of the Department of Justice in preparation for our annual performance plan for the new year. And our vision now is justice for all in South Africa. And we've decided to keep it that simple because that's how easy it must be for people to access justice in our country. And our mission is to administer an efficient and responsive justice system for the benefit of our people. And the values that underpin that would be commitment to constitutional values and the culture of human rights, the rule of law, excellence in service, responsiveness, accountability, and good governance. Our strategic goals, Chairperson, are set out on slide number 14. these include the optimization of the deployment of people, processes, and technology to meet service delivery and good governance requirements of the department. Number two is people-centered justice services that are accessible, reliable, and efficient. Number three is a corporatized, cost-effective, and integrated quality legal services to proactively protect the best interests of the state. And number four, the promotion of constitutionalism, human rights, and the commitment to international legal relations. Chairperson, on slide number 15, we talk about what changes have we made from the last annual performance plan to the new one. And as will be apparent to honorable members, we have shifted by and large from programs that are more inward-looking, the matters that are focusing on management, especially financial management, how do we improve the internal workings of the department, to focus more on the transformation projects. What are those things the department will be doing that are outward-looking, that impact directly on the citizens of the country? So there are four thematic areas we've agreed upon, which have a bearing on that approach. The first being the transformation of the legal profession and the mechanisms for access to justice for all. Number two, of course, being the transformation of state legal services. Number three, the transformation of the criminal justice system and restoring public confidence. And number four, the entity oversight and institutional arrangements.
That is perhaps the only element that is more inward-looking, but its objective is to enable the portfolio of the Ministry of Justice and Correctional Services to be more effective in its output to the benefit of the people of the country, rather than simply being more inward-looking. So, on slide number 16, Chairperson, we talk there about some of the key challenges. There are many challenges that the department faces, but we thought we should lift the key challenges amongst the many that we have. The first being that the department is not in a position to fill all vacancies due to the cost containment measures. The wage bill of government has grown significantly over the years, and we've reached a point where the purse, the public purse, can no longer afford it. So we are now being required to cut down on it. The second biggest challenge relates to matters of infrastructure and all our service point matters related to infrastructure. Already the members here have talked about the challenges that we're faced with in our courts and the security matters, which then brings me to the third one regarding inadequate budget to secure our property, and members of the judiciary, the prosecution, and other members of the public within our courts. On slide number 17, we are looking at some of the initiatives we are planning to introduce in order to overcome the challenges we face, in particular the ones related to the budget cuts. And in this regard, we then talk about the fact that we need to, as we reduce the wage bill of government by allowing those who are going on retirement not to stay long, allowing people who leave their positions that we don't automatically fill those positions unless they are critical, that once we have allowed people to create vacancies by way of moving out of those positions for reasons of retirement, for reasons of greener pastures elsewhere, that we then need to use that opportunity to realign our structures better. And also at the same time look at the existing human resources within the organization and to look at how we retrain some of our people to make sure that we plug the gaps that exist within the system. At the same time, we are looking at how can we use technology to maximize the use of technology in doing some of the menial tasks so that we free people to do the real work that needs to be done, and then use technology then to overcome some of the challenges relating to the execution of menial work. But of course, this then means that we need to start optimizing how we plan and coordinate our work, especially in the areas of infrastructure, how we use, we coordinate our HR, how we coordinate our security functions for maximum impact. On slide number 18, Chairperson, in fact, slide number 18 up to 23, we simply just accentuate the challenge with regard to the budget cuts. On number 19, we show that there's a nominal growth over the MTF to our budget. That growth is way less than the percentage by which our budgets have been cut. As you can see, on average, as appears on the slide, our growth will be 5% in 17-18, leading to another 5% in 18-19, and 7% in the outer year of the MTF. On slide number 20, we present an overview of the budget allocation pay program, which I will not set out in detail. I think the slide speaks for itself. But slide number 21 shows that 72% of our budget goes to compensation of employees.
you spend 72% of your budget to expend 28%. That is certainly a situation that requires that it be revisited. And at 72%, this wage bill continues to increase, and that we need to really put a cap on this to make sure that we don't spend more money on compensation of employees and have less and less money to implement our programs. On slide number 22, Chairperson, we indicate the impact of the challenges that we're talking about with regard to the remuneration budget, partly because the Public Finance Management Act does not allow us to overspend, which means that we have to stay within budget at all times, but that the issues of the wage bill require negotiation at the central level of the public service, rather than it being left for departments to engage with the unions on the shop floor. So the entire public service would need to be engaged in negotiating on these matters. There's also the issue of the occupation OSD. Occupational specific dispensation. I beg your pardon, Chairperson. I'm indebted to NDPP for this. That there are challenges with regard to what it means, with regard to the levels at which the salaries of people are pegged, and the increases that they get over time, and the impact of that on the overall budget of the department, especially the compensation of employees. But also the increases that have been negotiated by the unions and government within the General Public Service Bargaining Council, that the lingering impact of that indicates that the housing subsidy has a 25% impact on our budget, that the medical aid subsidy has also increased to have 18% impact on the overall compensation of employees' budget. So in a sense, we are basically demonstrating there the fact that there are many other factors outside our control that are impacting negatively on our budgets. On infrastructure in particular, we would like to highlight the fact that in the new financial year, we have a shortfall of 731 million for projects that are already underway. It says that we have less money than we had hoped to have, or less money than was indicated we would have in light of the current budget cuts. But having dealt with those chapters, and I would like to then proceed swiftly to slide number 24 and talk about the transformational agenda, which forms part of our plans for the new financial year. On slide number 25, we outline the theme of the transformation of the legal profession and the mechanisms for access to justice for all. In this regard, we would like to say that this is in pursuance of objective number 12, for a transformed legal profession and a functional legal practice council. In this regard, Chairperson, we would like to show that already the code of conduct of the legal practice council has been concluded and has been published, was published already on the 10th of February, and that what remains to be done is set out at the bottom of that same slide, which talks about the forum which needs to undertake work in the course of this year, and that by July 2017 they would have dealt with the manner in which the elections of the council is done, the elections and jurisdictions of the provincial councils, the composition of the provincial councils, and the methods relating to vocational training, as well as the right of appearance
of the legal practitioners. So slides number 26 and 27 give a breakdown of the specific output indicators that we have, as well as the different dates by which we propose to have delivered on a range of these matters. If you look at, for an example, slide number 27, 10.1, the legal practice regulations must be published in the Government Gazette by the 31st of July this year. Council members must be appointed by the 31st of December, so that by the 28th of February 2018, we'll also have a transfer of assets from law societies to the council. Chairperson, that takes us then to slide number 28, which focuses on the objectives of increased access to courts by historically marginalized communities. In this area, Chairperson, we are particularly concerned about the need to improve access to justice and to make sure that the people are happy with the services that are rendered to them. And in this regard, we are relying on surveys that we will be conducting, which aim to establish at least 70% of satisfaction levels in our communities. With regard to access to justice, Chairperson, we're happy to indicate that thus far we have established a high court in Limpopo, in Polokwane, which is now fully operational, and that we will be completing the construction of the high court in Mpumalanga in the course of the new financial year, but that despite the building still being under construction, that high court is already sitting elsewhere to provide access to justice to the communities out there. Alongside that, Chairperson, we've also designated and aligned our magistrates' courts to the municipal boundaries to make sure that people are able to access justice within their municipal boundaries. And we think that this is a way of making sure that justice is brought to the doorstep of our communities. And in this regard, the department will extend its footprint by building new courts in the historically marginalized communities and areas, and also revamp some of the dilapidated court buildings, such as the one we have in Polokwane, which burned down several years ago, and many others across the length and breadth of our country. And our plans indicate which courts we will be prioritizing in this regard. Chairperson, I would now like to move to slide number 31, which then deals with the second theme regarding the transformation of state legal services. In this regard, I have already, as in responding to some of the questions that were posed on the political overview of the minister, that we have moved with regard to processes of reconfiguring the Office of the Solicitor General and the legislative processes that are underway to make sure that we provide for terms and conditions of employment under a new dispensation that is under construction with the assistance of GTEC. We're also looking at specialization units within offices of the state attorney, but we're also looking at the promotion of alternative dispute resolution mechanisms as a way of resolving disputes rather than simply relying on litigation on matters. But we're also, Chairperson, focusing on the promotion of trial advocacy to make sure that the state relies more and more on its own attorneys within the Office of the State Attorney, as well as the quality of legal advice they are able to get within the offices of the chief state law advisor. So government will have to more and more rely on its own lawyers by improving their ability to conduct trial advocacy. So slide number 32 to 34 indicates the breakdown of the objective indicators and the outputs that we've set ourselves over the next 12 months commencing the 1st of April and the different targets that I know honourable members have had the opportunity to look at in advance. This then takes me to the third theme on the transformation of the criminal justice system and restoring public confidence, which is set out on slide number 35. In this regard, Chairperson, the focus is on reducing backlog cases in the criminal justice system. And this we propose to do by focusing on minimizing the number of case postponements which result from the department's administrative delays. We're also looking at converting all 47 backlog courts into permanent courts. We have at this stage, as I said, Jefferson, 47 backlog courts that have been set up, and we think that by converting those courts into permanent courts, that will certainly assist us in making sure that we actually clear the backlogs as quickly as possible and make sure that there is no build-up of these backlogs as we move forward. We're also looking at ways and means of improving the integrated justice strategy that the Minister has spoken of a moment ago within the cluster, and we will be coming to the committee to speak to that as soon as the committee is ready to receive us. So slides number 36 to 38 gives a breakdown of the targets that we've set ourselves against the objective indicator, which indicates what numbers we're looking to achieve by the end of 2017-2018 financial year. Chairperson, that then brings me to the next objective, which is on slide number 39, which deals with an efficient and effective victim and witness support program, a matter that I know the NDPP will speak to in detail when he interacts with the committee tomorrow. In this regard, I would like to just highlight the fact that in order to address the challenges related to victims and witnesses, we will be focusing on adapting our courtrooms in line with the sexual offences model. In this regard, I'm talking here about the dual screens as well as mechanisms that will be used to enable children who are victims of abuse to be able to testify in spaces that prevent them to be in the line of sight by the perpetrators of the crimes against them. But we'll also be finalizing the child justice preliminary inquiries within 90 days after the first appearance in court, as well as finalizing the victim-centric strategy to intensify the current processes that will address the outcry and complaints in terms of services provided to victims of crime and the witnesses that have to testify in those proceedings. So the detail of the indicators and the targets are set out in slides 40 and 41, Chairperson. These being the targets we commit to realize in the course of the new financial year. Then this brings me to slide number 42, which relates to the objective of integrated family services. This, Chairperson, focuses on children whose families are going through disputes over parental responsibilities in order to protect the rights of children. In this regard, the chief family advocate will increase the number of children who will be assisted through the family advocate intervention to 58,320 by the end of 5 years. But we will then, in the immediate term, be focusing on improving the mediation services towards full compliance with legislation, improving efficiency within the child support system, improving the turnaround times in lodging court reports in the courts, and finally widening the net of child protection against harmful effects of international child abduction in line with our obligations as set out in the Hague Convention. Then slides number 43 and 44 give a breakdown of the targets that we've set ourselves for the 5 years and the target we've set ourselves in particular for the financial year 2017 and 2018. Then on slide number 45, Chairperson, we then deal with objective number 6, which focuses on efficient and effective civil justice system. In this regard, we are really focusing on promoting mediation services. Not all disputes before our courts need necessarily be left to the adversarial system to resolve them, partly because not many people are able to afford the services of lawyers, and that the court rolls are also full of matters that could otherwise be resolved through other mechanisms. So what we have proposed here and we've been implementing is the court annexed mediation process, which if properly and fully taken fully taken advantage of, will reduce legal fees for litigants as well as the court rolls, and therefore free our courts to have to deal with more complex matters. In order to deal with this, we will be increasing on the number of courts providing mediation services in our courts, throughout the length and breadth of the country, and also we will be monitoring the adherence to the turnaround times regarding the unopposed taxation matters. So we will also be monitoring the rollout of the court annexed mediation throughout the length and breadth of the country. At the moment, we have 12 magistrates courts, 9 of which are in Gauteng and 3 of which are in the Northwest, where these mediation services were being piloted. And more than 200 mediators have been accredited by the minister to provide mediation services in this regard. We believe that if this model should be rolled out to more courts in the country in order to enable more and more people to take full advantage of it. Chairperson, the slides number 46, 47, and 48, in fact up to 49, then deal with the breakdown that we're looking at relating to the specific work that would be done to give effect to the efficient and effective civil justice system. I beg your pardon, Chairperson. Slide number 43 focuses primarily on the transformation of the South African legal system, which is much broader than matters relating to the civil justice system. But there we give a breakdown of the number of projects that we are planning to undertake, the various targets for 2017 and 2018 under each of the indicators that we've set out in that slide. The final slide, Chairperson, under the transformation project will be the one relating to the entity oversight of and the institutional arrangements within the Ministry of Justice and Correctional Services. As we've already pointed out, we have already established a forum of the heads of departments and entities under the ministry, and this is already a meeting, and we are planning to continue with this work, and the forum will continue to meet in order to ensure alignment of plans, better coordination of our efforts, as well as to monitor the implementation of the performance agreement that was concluded between the minister and the president. So, Chairperson, that concludes the part relating to the transformation agenda of the department. The following slides will deal with what is called the sustained agenda. That is the ongoing work of the department. Most of it is mandated by legislation. So in this regard, Chairperson, if you will permit, I hope the time does permit, I'm going to ask our head of strategy to walk us through it very quickly. And if time still permits, we will then ask the CFO to speak to the financial aspects of the plan.
Okay, you are welcome. Proceed. I thought they were marginalizing you this
time. Thanks, Chair. Under the sustained agenda, the first objective that we have as a department is compliance with prescriptions to achieve and sustain unqualified audit opinion. This is one of the reasons why we are in governance, that everything must work properly. And within this area, we will sustain the DOJCD vote account, ensuring that it remains unqualified, as well as our funds, whether it's the guidance fund, etc. All those funds will remain unqualified. The issue that we're still grappling with, Chair, is the third-party funds, and we are going to continue to address issues around that. There's a new system that has been developed to assist with that, and we are going to ensure that it gets full implementation to address those issues. In addition, Chair, to ensure that our books are okay, we deal with audit facilitation, there's quality assurance, there's internal audit that assists us in that matter, and we will continue to not only get clean audits, but we want to ensure, or unqualified audits, we want to ensure that any findings or any significant findings are reduced, as shown then on the next slide, on slide 53. And as already mentioned, we will work with internal audit, and we will look at our audit findings and try and address them. Under Program 2, Court Services, This area has already been dealt with from slide 12 to slide 33, so we won't touch on it. I think it's already been dealt with. All the indicators under court services form part of the transformation agenda, so we won't deal with it. Now, under state legal services, those that we haven't dealt with, but let's start first with the strategic objectives. Those ones are fairly standard. We've dealt with them before. For the sake of time, I won't go through that list. Within the master services, our objectives still remain. All right, sorry, Chair, about that. Slide number 59. Deals with our objectives as they relate to the master's office. We will continue with our quest for turnaround times, ensure that our services are delivered on time to our people. But most importantly, under number 4 there, we want to ensure that the remaining service points that deal with the master's have PEAC or that's called the... now the word fails me, but I'll get back to that, Chair. So under the objectives, like I said, we want to increase the number of cases we handle under the masters, and our turnaround times are indicated there. The PEAC I was talking about is a paperless estate administration system that ensures that everything that we do is paperless for safety, for safekeeping, and to avoid all sorts of issues that are related with paper-based systems. So it's one where we are saying in all our service points by 2018-19 they should all be covered by PEAC. Moving on to quality legal advisory services, again here, Chair, the focus is on our turnaround times. You will see the targets are already indicated there. That will continue. But as an objective, it's not only enough just to do all our legal opinions and all our certification of bills on time. But the most important thing is if that job is done correctly, we shouldn't have major constitutional challenges. So our objective still is do that work, but do it and ensure that we minimize or avoid altogether constitutional challenges. So the turnaround times are indicated on the slide. Then moving on to Objective 12, international obligations. Chair, the most important thing in this area is to check the level of compliance of international bodies within our own department. Secondly, we must ensure that we table different reports on time, and we set a target for that. And within the next financial year, 4 country reports, as indicated in the slide, will be prepared. And in addition to that, on our ongoing work, we must analyze extradition cases that come to our office on time. There's a turnaround time for that. And we must negotiate 2 bilateral mutual legal assistance with the G20 countries. So those are the targets are indicated. Under Objective 13, legislative instrument, again, we aim to ensure that all the legislation that we develop passes constitutional muster. That's our objective. But most importantly, we finalize all our legal our legislative program via the Leader of Government Business. And Chair, if you'd like to have a look, we already have a list available that says what legislation is going to be undertaken this year. So if you want me to show it on the board, I can do so. All right, and moving on then to promotion of broad-based knowledge on and support the values of equality, human dignity, and fundamental human rights. So the most important program that we implement is the one funded by the EU that deals with socio-economic justice. It's called the Socio-Economic Justice Program. And within that program, as indicated on the next slide, it deals with knowledge of human rights and all other programs that aim at constitutional issues or human rights issues within our country. So the first thing, the objective within this program is to ensure that there's high awareness, and that is done through the surveys that are done by the FHR, in fact. So the aim there is by 2018-19, the next survey will be done in 2018-19, 65% of our people must show awareness, or those that have been surveyed, 65% of those surveys must show our awareness of the Constitution. That would show the impact of the program. What are we doing within that program? Like I already said, there's raising of awareness, there's a whole lot of society or civil society organizations that are funded to assist with human rights programs, and that will continue like it has been continued in the last few years. On going to the detail of those, the final program that we did, program 4 for the NPA will be dealt with tomorrow. And then the last one, Chair, talks about the integrated justice system. Within this, one of the key programs is the implementation of the 28 KPI to measure the performance of the integrated justice or of the criminal justice system. Our target is to do all 28 KPIs eventually. We are on 14. We are going to be doing an additional 4 in the next year. And the other issue that we will be grappling with is to ensure that data is electronically exchanged with 9 government departments and entities. Some already are exchanging, some is a work in program. And within our own department, the enhancement of the ICMS criminal or the ICM or the integrated criminal management system, the integrated case management system must be enhanced in order for it to align with the transversal. So the as indicated on slide 80, we're going to get to 28 KPIs by 2019-20, and the indicators then on slide 81 deals with the number of government departments as indicated, the KPI data uploaded, and also the number of applications that we do within our department. So, Chair, in conclusion, we have taken guidance from ministry, from government stakeholders, as well as from Parliament and all other stakeholders, and we have included as far as possible in our strategic plan. The decreasing budget allocation as well as an inability to fill posts remains a major issue on our plate, but having said that, we will continue to embark on the program that we set for ourselves within the next 3 years. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I think I'm not sure how much Nahari the committee is saying that we should have ended at 1 o'clock, if I'm well informed. So I think the DG actually put his finger on the problem, which I will just once again confirm, is that our challenge is in terms of compensation, and our challenge is in terms of infrastructure, in terms of the budget. The final compensation budget, if you look at the increase that the department received, it's 5%. Whereas the negotiated increase is 7.5%, and if we just look at the warm bodies in the department, the increase for us would be at about 6% in the next year if we just stick to the current warm bodies we have in the department as at the end of January. So we have a challenge in relation to the remuneration budget. Furthermore, the recent budget cuts that we've had, and basically we had the choice to take a further cut in normal operational cost or in infrastructure, and we really couldn't afford anything, but the cut was in then made in the infrastructure side, whereas we have found that in terms of DPW and IDT, the performance on our contracts has actually improved to such an extent that we are now experiencing challenges which we will take up with National Treasury in the new financial year. But I think what is important just, and I will just stick to the summary then, is that you can see the growth patterns per program in the department, and you will see that court services is getting the major chunk of the budget, and that we keep investing there. And you can also see that the highest growth really was in court services and the NPA, how we've allocated the funds. Our challenge remains that we have not invested adequately in state legal services, and it's dependent on us finalizing the strategy on how we will deal with this, how it will be operationalized. At that stage, we would be in a better position to negotiate more funding from National Treasury. And that is also why we involved GTAC, so that they can assist us in in determining our final strategy. If we go to the next slide, I think DG spoke adequately about that. I think that's one. I will stop there. That one is the most important one. It once again show the growth in the compensation of employees. And the reasons for that is basically the higher than expected increases that employees received. We already, DG spoke eloquently about it, the impact of the housing subsidies, the impact of the medical aid increases. And you can then see that our compensation is growing extensively. And that is basically our challenge. How do we deal with this? And the department is then currently reviewing its processes. It's reviewing how it's doing its business so that we can find alternatives in this regard. Thank you.
DG and Minister, and Deputy Minister. It's quite clear that you spend more money on compensation infrastructure. Have you ever reconsidered the fact that many of your entities come before us and say they want a footprint everywhere? They don't share the infrastructure. Everybody wants to have offices everywhere, but these days we have technology. If I have to provide services in Nongoma, do I have to go and establish an office in Nongoma? I think that we should look at that matter. The money that go into those entities to establish offices all over is the money that should be coming to you. And I don't think that everybody should be coming to us and say, we want to go to Treasury, Treasury must get more money. Where does Treasury get this unlimited funds that we need? Can I suggest that maybe this is a matter that can also go to the Forum for Institutions Supporting Democracy to say, how do we rationalize all these offices and then share the infrastructure that is there? The second and last question is, I know I've been raising this, I think I've annoyed lots of people, that the Foundation for Human Rights was established by Nelson Mandela as a channel for funds to go to civil society. But I don't think that it was meant that the department outsource its responsibility. And I think as this committee would be interested to know what is the mandate of that foundation. Is their mandate not subject to review in the light of the challenges that we face? Shouldn't we also look at the composition of that foundation? Is COSATU represented? Is Contralesa represented? Is the National Interfaith Council of South Africa represented? Are the advice centers represented? Because those are the beneficiaries. So they would be able to say we are serviced well or not well. So I would think that we should also look at reviewing the composition of that to make it more representative and accountable to the beneficiaries that they serve. And this is not to cast any shadow or aspersion on anybody. I think we want all institutions to be accountable to the people that they serve. And I think DG, we have done very well, and Minister, we are very satisfied. I think lunch is ready. Honorable Mpumlwana, today you really didn't impress me, you were too quiet. But I think it's an indication that you are happy with the performance of the department, and I'm happy to see that. Okay. Okay. Honorable Don?
Just to check, are we returning after lunch to raise questions, or hopefully?
Yeah, we are returning. Honorable Don? Lunch is in Maxby Building. No, I think there is something wrong here. We invite the department. We say lunch is only for members of the committee. And we say they must be back here. Do we want them to collapse and then the meeting also collapses? So what's the arrangement? Why lunch not good? Oh, they say, I'm told you have S&T. So please look after yourself But we have
can I ask on behalf of the acting minister, because both she and myself are members of parliament, is lunch for members of parliament?
I'm told you are covered in Kim Kam.
No, I didn't know it was all day till 5 p.m. It's crazy. They should have told us.
Thank you.